Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is your host, Martha. In this episode, Shada and I do end up talking about abuse. So this is a content warning for that topic. You know yourself, listen as you are able. Also, I usually make episodes that nannies can listen to around their children. But for this one, I would recommend maybe listening to it yourself before sharing with little ears. You know your kids the best, so you can make the call. But I just wanted to let you know up front that we do end up talking about a few different types of abuse. So there is that warning for you. I hope you enjoy the episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. Thanks for listening. And welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. This is your host, Martha Tyler. And this week, we are going to be talking about teaching bodily autonomy and consent to kids. And to do that, I have brought on Shada Lambert, also known as Nanny Shars. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you back on the podcast.
Yeah. Yes,
second time. Yes. And it will not be the last if I have anything to do with it. So
1000%.
Yes. So before we get started talking about bodily autonomy and consent, Shada, I would love to hear your nanny journey. And I know that you shared it with us last time, but it's such a good one. I would love to hear it again.
Thank you. So I started off a nanny. So I've been a nanny for 17 years. And I started off when I was in my teens, started off as a babysitter, as most nannies do. And I was in a dance school at the time. So I was doing dance and drama and theatre and things like that. And I was my dance teacher's assistant. So I was teaching children and adults, you know, drama skills, dance skills and things like that. And through that, I started babysitting for some of the families. I was babysitting for my drama teacher in school. And then I got recommended to my first nanny position. It was for a single mother who had just gone through a divorce and she just needed a bit of help. So I kind of was more like a mother's help. And then I learned quite a lot of my skills from that position because it was a newborn who was only a few weeks old. I was with them for a few years. And that's kind of where I learned most of my nanny skills. And after that, you know, you do the qualifications and things like that. But yeah, that's how I started. So here I am now. I am obviously an international nanny, a parent coach, sleep consultant, potty training specialist. I'm an entrepreneur, also nanny, mentor many nannies as well around the world. And I like to believe I'm a childcare expert as well. So that's
you
where
are.
I stand today.
It is very much not like to believe. You very much are.
Thank you.
Yes, I do not have any children, but if I did, you would be very top of my list of nannies.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I'm picky because I'm also a nanny.
Yeah. So am I. I'm very picky as well. And sometimes it's quite controversial saying this, but sometimes I don't know if I could have a nanny because I am a bit of a control freak when it comes to things that I really love. Mm-hmm. So I would have to have a nanny like me.
Right.
And then
right.
I'll be able to relax.
Yes. Yes. One of my past guests, Colleen, said the same thing, except she thought it was going to be that. And then she did have children and she was like, actually, you know, once I found the right person, I was able to really trust her.
Yeah.
You know, she was like, but it took a while to find, you know, the right fit. But once I found it, it was great.
You have to go with your gut, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. Your instinct will tell you, you know, if this person's right. And you feel it in your heart as well. You know, the person might be a really lovely person, but are they the best fit for your child?
Yes. So
that's what I think I will base it on. And because I know what it means to be an excellent nanny, I will know straight away when a nanny comes in, just by her or his presence, mm-hmm. you know, I'll be able to be like, yeah, this is the one.
Yep. Yep. Presence is so important. Love that. Well, thank you for sharing your journey. I just love it. let's talk about teaching bodily autonomy and consent to kids. So one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about this is because this episode is going to be released on Valentine's Day. And yeah. As I was thinking through, you know, what I wanted to do around Valentine's Day, you know, at first crafts came to mind and things like that. And then I was like, you know, Valentine's Day is this holiday about showing love for each yeah. other. And I think it's really, really important to talk about bodily autonomy and consent when we're talking about love.
Yes.
And I also think that a lot of times we don't trust kids to understand these concepts, and yet they do.
They 100% do.
They really do.
They really do.
Yeah. And so I think that a lot of people think, you know, you wait until the teen years to start talking about bodily autonomy and consent. And that's just so backwards to me of like, no, you start in infancy.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. So can you talk about, like that beginning of life, what are some ways in infancy that we can start teaching bodily autonomy and Definitely. Consent?
Perfect. So there's so many different ways. And I always like to speak from a place of experience, what I've experienced. I never would advise people to do something that I've never tried or done. Mm-hmm. And I always try to advise things that work. So I'll give you an example. You know, part of us being nannies, we have to do bath time with mm-hmm. children. And I make a clear point never to touch the child's private area. They always do that, even if it means that I show them, you know, get their hand and I say, put it here and this is what you have to do. I show them in that way. So yesterday when I was working with a two-year-old little boy and I was helping him wash himself down, and then I gave him the sponge and I said, do you want to do your private parts? And he said, yes. And then I gave him the sponge and he was able to, you know, clean down there.
Right,
yeah. And I feel like giving him that choice is very important. And I think sometimes we forget these things as adults, that children do have this, you know, governance over their own body. But it's also really important we give them that choice to decide. And even when, like, I meet a new child or going for an interview or a trial, or, you know, I'm a temp nanny, so I go into homes and some of the children have probably never seen me before, right?
Right.
And so I ask for a high five. I would love to have a hug, but until the children feel comfortable with me, I will ask for a high five. And if they don't want to give me a high five, that's absolutely fine. But it's a way for me to, you know, as well, teach them about they don't always have to say yes if they don't feel comfortable, mm-hmm. right? I grew up, obviously, I'm Jamaican, British Jamaican. So I grew up where manners is very important. And sometimes you get forced to say hello to people you don't want to say hello to, or forced to hug, you know, elders that you don't really want to hug and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I make a big conscious choice to unlearn that behavior, because if a child is showing you that they're uncomfortable, then you need to listen. Right. And they don't always have to say it verbally. They can show it in their body language. Some children are more shy than others as well. So, you know, you forcing the child to do something they generally don't want to do in terms of their body, you know, even if it's shaking a hand or a high five, they might not want to do that to that person. Say, okay, that's fine. Maybe we could do a fist bump. If they don't want to do that, maybe we could do a wink together, or, you know, different ways that you could go around it. And I think it's just very important as well when we're teaching children about their body parts, that we teach them the parts that are only for them to touch. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very clear on that. Very, very clear. No one touches that area but you. And I teach all my nanny children that. And if anyone ever touches that area, you let me know, or you let mommy know, or you let, you know, I let them know who they need to tell. And I take that very, very seriously, especially when I'm teaching them about their body and different body parts.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, there was so much gold in there. So let's go through it.
I talk a lot and I talk fast. So if I'm going too fast, please say, Shada, wait, stop a minute.
No. I loved all of that. And I totally agree. I was born and raised in the Southeast in Tennessee. And what you were saying about your upbringing as a Jamaican is very similar to in the Southeast, like being polite is very, very important. And there is this hierarchy, so just being older gains you respect, which I've always kind of questioned. I'm like, no, there's also needs to be actions and and things like that, you know, to warrant respect. I don't think just because you've gone around the sun a few more times on this big blue ball that you are that you are worth more. But anyway, I completely agree with you, and I think about it this way. When we ask children to ignore what they are feeling internally to make someone else comfortable, we are asking children to make this giant sacrifice for someone else's comfort. And we're asking them to be like the bigger person. We're asking for more emotional labor from children than we're willing to ask from the grandparent or the neighbor or the whoever is wanting some sign of affection from your child. And that's not okay.
I 100% agree. And it's a thing of where a lot of people don't think children have that governance over their body, and they generally do, because you have to teach them that from early, and that's what you're saying, in infancy, and you know, when they're younger, in the early years, it's important we teach them these things, because it also shows, God forbid, anything bad was to happen to them in terms of, you know, abuse or someone trying to take advantage of them, they know what's right and wrong,
right?
And sometimes some children won't know that if they haven't really been taught it. You know, if they haven't been taught that this is my private area and it never gets touched, or, you know, this is my body and I choose who touches this. And, you know, we have now that we're older, we have movements like the Me Too movement and things like that. And sometimes it just makes me wonder, is this a topic that we need to talk about more? Mm-hmm. Not to say that it would avoid those things happening, because, you know, there is some, unfortunately, bad people in the world.
Right.
But, you know, stats even show that like one in every, I think, three females are like, or one in every, what was it? One in every,
yeah, I think it's one
males fall victim to unwanted sexual contact before their 18th birthday.
Right.
So for me, that's quite alarming. I'm like, wow, that's quite a lot, because I know 20 people, and I know for females, it's one in three. So if there was another person here, there's been at least one of us that have been through some form of unwanted sexual contact. And that could be in terms of, you know, when you're walking down the road, someone smacks your bum, or, you know, and that has happened before, by the way. So yes. I'm going to say that has happened before. And that is a form of, you know, sexual assault. But people wouldn't know that unless they've been taught that. Right. And when you're younger, if we teach children about, you know, making sure that you are looking after your body, and we teach them self-love. This is a big thing I say. I nanny with love. So I teach the children how to love themselves. I love myself a lot. When I was younger, I didn't so much. I had very low self-esteem. But as I've got older, I've learned that, you know, to love myself is so important. And that's why when I was younger, I found it very difficult to set boundaries. And I used to make people walk all over me. I didn't love myself. But the more I learned about loving myself and building up my self-esteem, boundaries were just automatically coming into place, because now I'm like, I teach myself to love myself. So why am I going to teach someone else to come in and mistreat me? It's not going to work. Now I'm like zero tolerance.
Yeah.
It's really genuinely from when, children are young, these things need to be taught.
Right. Yeah. There's a comedian named Daniel Sloss. He's got a couple, he's Scottish, and he's got a couple specials on Netflix. And in one of his specials, he talks about, he's like, you know, I was loving myself at like 10%. So all someone had to do was come in and love me at 15%. And I was like, oh my gosh, like they love me. And he was like, you know, I figured out now I love myself at 100%. So somebody's got to come in and love me more than that.
Yeah.
To be able to be in my life.
Yeah. Match it. And you know, I love myself a lot. It's taken many years to get me here.
Same here.
Now I will not, like, you, if anyone comes into my life, you have to treat me as good as I treat myself or better, not less. And these are things that, you know, we teach children these things from very young about loving themselves. And I do that through affirmations and, you know, looking in the mirror and saying something nice about yourself today, or what, you know, focusing on your strengths and the things that you're really good at, and, you know, seeing what your special superpower is. There's some things that some people can do that they don't know anyone else that can do, right? Me, I'm extremely resilient. Like, my resilience is one of my biggest strengths, and it's something that I sometimes don't fully understand, but I love that I have it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I believe it's one of my gifts. I feel like I have a few gifts, but I feel like that's one of them. And so, you know, it's really important to teach children about these special gifts that they have that are unique to them. And it really helps with building their confidence, and also, you know, teach them about loving themselves.
Yeah. And I'm curious with the affirmations. Have you found, do you start by scaffolding them and like kind of helping coach what to say in the mirror? And then,
to say something good about themselves, what they like about themselves.
Right. Have you found that some kids struggle with that at first?
Definitely. And that's why I ask, because it's all about mindset, right? And when you have a mindset shift, if you're naturally not thinking about these things, it's also about being mindful, teaching the children how to be mindful about how they feel about themselves and how they speak about themselves. So any children that I look after, they're not allowed to say any bad things about themselves. And if they do, we can talk about it, and we can co-sign up with something that you do that's good. Right. But I don't, you know, if I asked my five-year-old the other day that I was looking after, what do you like about yourself? First, I asked them, what do they like about me? What's my best thing about Shada? Mm-hmm. And then they would tell me something. And I'd say, can I say something that I like about you? And then they would say, okay. And then I will tell them something that I like about them. So I said to my nanny child, I think you are extremely funny and you have a very good sense of humor. Mm. And he was like, what's the sense of humor? And I said, the sense of humor, I explained it to him. And he's like, I agree. And I was like, what? You know, and it's because I've been with him since he was just three. So I've been doing this with him from very young. And when I went to visit the other day to look after them, like ad hoc wise, these are things now that are instilled in them, you know, mm-hmm. These things that he now is aware of about himself. And I said, I also think you're an amazing at building Lego. You can build Lego so quicker than anyone I've ever met. And he was like, you're really rubbish at Lego. And I was like, well, thank you. And I don't know, the affirmations are getting, you know, we're going a bit to the left, but And that is true, you know, that is a weakness of mine, you know. So these are the things, children, you know, you can rely on them to be brutally honest, which is what I love. They don't sugarcoat anything.
Me too. I love that.
I love it. Absolutely love it. So it's really important that, you know, eventually they start to think very positively about themselves. And this is things that they probably would never have done if you didn't speak to them about the good attributes, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I'm also curious if you have found that as they learn how to give themselves affirmations and find the things that they love about themselves, if you find that they start getting more specific.
Yeah, they do. I am very smart. I'm very good at this. And, you know, they read. And for me, I always co-sign it. Yes, you are. You are very smart at that, or you are very good at this. And, you know, children love that reassurance from an adult, especially an adult that they trust.
Yeah.
You know, so validation, I've even had it before.
So important.
So we say that again.
Validation is so important.
Yes, it really, really is. So I definitely feel like it does help, you know, and for me, I find that it's affirmations are a bit harder with teenagers because, you know, we all go through that awkward stage, you know, in adolescence and, you know, we don't really know where we're going, what we are, what we're doing and stuff like that. But I feel like the younger you do it with children, the more effective it is. And that's why I'm very big on doing it from very early. And it's very important as well that I teach them to find good in other people as well. So what is it that you like about someone else? What is it that you like about yourself? What are you very good at? What are you not so good at? What do you think you could improve on? And it's just part of mixing mindfulness with, you know, with the affirmations together.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's so important. And it helps give them, you know, this armor against someone coming in and tearing them down, because there is definitely physical abuse, but there is also emotional and psychological abuse
and verbal that
is helping give them tools to resist.
Right. Right.
Of like, no, that is a lie. What you just said about me with the negative thing you just said about me is a lie.
Yeah.
And I think that is a skill, like certainly I had to unlearn so many negative things that I took, you know, that were lies, but I took as truth. And it's hard. It's a lot of hard work. And I see so many of my friends, like we joke, you know, it's therapy 30s now of like, everyone's going to therapy to unlearn.
Everyone, our generation literally has to unlearn everything we were taught. Yeah. I agree. What was that saying? Can you say that again for me?
Therapy 30s.
Oh, I'm taking that. You're going to have to trademark that. I'm using it. Therapy 30s. It's so true.
Yes. Because I feel like almost all of my friends were all in therapy and we talk about, you know, this is what I unlearned today. And so, yes, I think that is such a crucial and important part of helping give children this sense of self that cannot be messed with as easily.
Yes.
I also love what you said about, you know, with young children, teaching them that they are in charge of their bodies. So I teach my children, one, I teach them, I use their name. So let's say we're talking about a Sally, and I would say, Sally is in charge of Sally.
Yes.
And so, and that helps in so many different areas, not only bodily autonomy and consent, but it also helps in like tattling and, you know, discipline and all that, because it's like, well, it doesn't matter what Luke was doing. Sally is in charge of Sally.
Yeah.
Let's talk
and
about
I,
Sally.
I have my own mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. But I also teach them the phrase, my body, my choice.
Yes.
And it is very, very funny to hear a toddler scream, my body, my choice.
My choice.
Sometimes it backfires. Because you're like out in public and you're like, okay, I need to hold your hand to cross the street. And they're like, my body, my choice. Yeah. And we certainly talk about how, you know, it is your body, your choice, but we also have to be safe.
Yeah.
And so we have those deeper conversations, but sometimes things pop up when you're out in public and it can get wild. But I think I would much rather have that incident happen and have a few people look at me strangely on the street than for that child to not understand the concept that they are in charge of their bodies. Yeah. And that we have to make safe choices for our bodies. And so sometimes that means we have to hold hands crossing the street, or that, you know, if you are close to a hot stove, I have to pick you up and get you away. And then we can talk about it. There are safety comes first.
Yes. Always.
Always. And I definitely talk about that, about how sometimes I can't give a choice because I need to keep you safe. Yes. But I also look for so many opportunities for bodily autonomy. So like you were saying about, you know, you offer a high five, or I still to this day ask kids how they want to say hello or goodbye every day. And it's different every day. There's sometimes that they want, I had one former nanny kid that I would ask that, and he would say 1 million kisses.
Oh,
that's how he wanted to say goodbye. And so, especially over the weekends when I would leave.
Yeah, for sure. They know it's going to be a few days before you come back.
Yeah. It's that too. Oh, I just want to wave because, you know, I'm invested in my magnetiles and I don't want to get up and give you a hug, which is fine.
Yeah. Like,
that's totally fine. Yeah. So I think, having kind of a list in your head of different ways that they can say goodbye. So it can, you know, it can range from like a snuggly hug to a wave.
Yeah.
And I also think it's really great to create your own like kind of almost language around it. So,
yeah, like a little greeting that you do, just you and your nanny child do. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we'll do we'll do elbow bumps a lot, and we call them fin bumps.
Yeah.
Things like that. So, you know, because we've pretended to be sharks or dolphins or whatever that day. And so we're like, fin bump.
That's proper cool. In Jamaica, we have like a touch. It's called touch. It's just, if you were to get your hand and just put it into your, how would you, just put your ball in, like a ball of fist, your fist into a ball, and then you nudge each other together. So it's like a hand touch.
Mm.
I don't know how to explain it over the podcast.
Is it like a fist bump? Open.
Yeah, so it's like, you call it a fist bump, but in Jamaica we say touch.
Oh, love it.
Yeah, it's because touch. So you would just nudge the person, and it's just like a sign of respect, like wagwan means like, you know, hi, how are you? So you touch them and you say like wagwan. So I sometimes teach that greeting to my nanny children. The parents crack up, you know.
Yes.
I'm always teaching them little Jamaican sayings, and they find it hilarious.
Yeah, but I love that, because that is a special thing between you and the nanny child, and like you're sharing your culture and they are, you know, learning about your culture, and it's lovely.
I find it hilarious. They love it. They always say, how do you say hello in Jamaican? How do you say bye in Jamaican? I'm like, there's not actual way, but I teach them little ways. So sometimes they like to do it, and I'm like, wagwan, and I do it with them, and they find it so funny.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So I think giving that space is so important. And I think throughout the day, there's other opportunities. So even with babies, and we talked about this on the Rye episode, but even with babies, just telling them what you're doing as you're doing it. So when you're changing their diaper, talking to them about it really helps set them up for later. Understanding that is the level. If somebody is going to be touching your body, they need to also be communicating with you about how they're touching your body.
Definitely. Some people think they hear that and be like, what? But it's the baby. They understand, because when you say to a baby, we're going to get up and we're going to go do this, then we're going to go do this, and then we're going to do this, You trust me, that baby understands. Mm-hmm. If you do that every single morning, it's a routine, it's a structure that the child has become accustomed to. So I totally agree. We're going to change your nappy now. So we're going to go get the wipes. And I'm constantly talking to the children that I look after, no matter how young they are. And I think that's one of the reasons why the youngest child that I looked after for the last 2 years, his speech is like so advanced, because mm-hmm. even sometimes I know his dad used to be in the room opposite and he used to hear, and sometimes he's coming in and he's like, sometimes I wonder who you're talking to in here. And I'm like, I'm talking to him. But he's like, you talk like you're talking to him. I do. I talk, have a proper conversation with him and I let him know. And, you know, some parents think it's quite strange, but some absolutely love it. And you find that children genuinely understand. So I am very big on that as well, especially with babies saying, we're going to do this now, or this is what we're about to do. And just prepping them before it happens.
Right. Yeah. And like, I try to, if a baby is invested in something, I try to not just pick them up, you know, I try to like, either if they're, you can tell when even a baby is in like that zone of play, right?
Yeah.
Where they're in that zone, they're focused on something. And so I really try to, unless I have to break it, I try to let it ride until they're done with whatever they're processing at the moment. But I definitely don't just pick them up and take them out of it. I like get down with them on their level and like look at it too for a minute and, you know, maybe do some sports casting about what I'm seeing of like, oh, I see you opened the lid or whatever they're doing. And then I say, okay, now it's, you know, it's time for your bottle or your nap or whatever. And then I pick them up, but that time is so important. Because if you're in the middle of something and invested and somebody just like a giant just came and picked you up, can you imagine how mad that would make you?
Yeah, I'd be furious and I can't walk or talk either.
Right. And yeah, I can't do anything like, about it.
It can't even ruin my fun.
Right. Right. And so I just think like thinking about it from the point of view of the child can make all the difference in how respectful you're being.
Definitely. And I wanted to add to that as well in terms of even children's spaces. This is one of the things I learned in my master's degree, which I thought was absolutely amazing. So I did a master's in childhood studies and early years, and we did a module on play, and it just made me think about, you know, children having governance over their space as well. Mm-hmm. And it was saying, if a child is has created a space, so for instance, you know, sometimes children create dens, right?
Right.
And they create these small spaces, play spaces for themselves to fit in. Be very mindful of your, as an adult, be very mindful of your position in that play, because it sometimes could be that, you know, I see a child build a tent and they go in there and they're playing very nicely. And I just, well, not that I would, but I'll just rush into this tent with them and sit with them. And I'm like, I've not even asked them permission to be in their space. You know, and I understand that in an open space is fine, but if you see that your child is confined to a space and they're quite comfortable doing what they're doing, ask for permission. Can I come in? Or, you know, am I allowed to come in? Are adults allowed in the tent? And a lot of the time they'll be like, no. And it's like, okay, but let me know. You know, or is there anything I could bring you? And then, you know, you can join in with the play. But it's just very important to be mindful of your position in that. And when you mentioned about, you know, the baby playing and not just picking the baby up, that's I think similar to what I'm saying, but for more of a toddler or, you know, an older child. I think it's very important. It made me think, like, and then I started thinking, have I ever interrupted a child's space? Like, I started, and now I'm like extra cautious. Like, I make sure I'm so mindful about it. And, you know, if a child is playing, or, you know, the in the bath and they're cleaning themselves or they're playing, I allow them to just do it. And I sit and I wait and I'm like, do you want me to help you, or do you need any help? Like, being there for assistance, but not over taking over in a way. That makes sense.
Yes, yes. I will say with the small spaces, I have the opposite problem of them saying no. They often invite me into their tiny spaces, yeah. And I yeah. have to tell them like I cannot fit in there. I'm like, I'll put half of my body in there,
but leg or toe.
Yeah, I'm like, I would love to join you in that space, but then you won't have any room to play because
right. My bum will take up half of the space anyway. I say that to them all the time. Yeah. Charlotte's too big. I can't fit in there, my lovely. My thigh alone will take up all the space.
Yeah.
Like, you can fit. I'm like, and I'm in there, I'm squashed and my legs are, you know, my knees are to my head. And I'm like sitting in there and I'm like, oh, this is fun. Not.
Right. Which brings me to another point of, I think, modeling your own bodily autonomy is really important as well. So if you do not want a child in your lap for whatever reason, there are times that I'm like really warm, you know, like right after we've gone outside, it's been so cold in Chicago that, you know, you're bundled up and then you come back inside into the warm house and the adjustment in temperature. And I just am so hot. And if a child wants to sit in my lap right then, I really struggle with that. And I have told children before, you know, I don't want you in my lap right now. I'm feeling really, really warm. But how about you sit right next to me and we'll read a book together? Or yeah. offering another way of connecting. But
yeah, an alternative.
Yeah, I'm in charge of my body and my body is not comfortable with this right now.
Yeah. 100% agree. And you know, funny enough, I had to have this conversation with my nanny boys that are 2 and 5 because they do this thing, which is, you know, for them it's very innocent, but I had to teach them just in case, because they go to school, they go to nursery. They do this thing where they slap my bum a lot.
Mm.
And I had to have a conversation with them and say, you know what? It's like, we can't just slap people's bums, okay? And they're like, why not? They just didn't get it. And me and their mom had to have this conversation with them because it was about teaching them about different people's bodies. One, it actually really hurts because it generally did.
Yeah.
But also, you know, if they go out to nursery and think they could slap a little girl's bum or a little boy's bum, like, it's not okay. So I know it's very innocent, but at the same time, you need to have these conversations because they don't know if someone was to do that to them, if it would be okay or not, you know? And children, right. you know, children play sometimes, you know, they want to give you a kiss or they want to give you a hug and stuff like that. And that's absolutely fine. But things like, you know, children play little silly games, smacking each other's bum or, you know, kiss chase. That's mm-hmm. one of the things that I'm just like as well. Like, I remember in school, boys playing kiss chase and I'm absolutely hating it. Like, what is this? Don't kiss me. I don't like this, you know.
Right.
But these are the little games that obviously we don't play those things, but these are the things that we need to, you know, have a conversation about. I've had it before where nanny child said, yeah, we played kiss chase today in the playground, and I'm like, whoa, okay, we need to have a conversation about this. I don't know if that's in America, do you guys have that? Or is it
yeah
English?
It's okay, it's usually called like cooties, like giving cooties or something like that, like
okay.
We don't
yeah. Kiss chase.
Yeah, that's I feel like kiss chase is a better name for it, but
yeah. Literally. And I remember doing that as a child and just feeling really uncomfortable.
Yeah,
like I'm not liking it at all. I didn't, you know, when you're younger you're like, boys, I don't like them, so, you know, you like right. that. But yeah, it's these are the conversations we need to have because, like I said, it was very innocent, but slapping someone's bum is not okay.
Right.
And if they don't learn that from early, then, you know, it could escalate to other things.
And teaching about the nuance of different relationships show affection in different ways.
There you go.
So while you are fine with them doing that, and maybe you're not, and then that's a different conversation. But if that is part of your way of engaging and playing with them, then great. But yes, saying that this is not a universal thing.
Yeah.
Like
when you're out of the house, you can't do that. You
right.
know, at home, that's a way that we show love to each other mm-hmm. and things like that. But when you're out of the home, you can't do that.
Right. Yes. Yes.
At the moment, my nanny boys are really into licking. So they said, oh my goodness, they lick my face. Like, I was just like, guys, and I let them, you know, I'm like, okay, listen, you only do this with us, okay? And right. I let their mom and dad know, they've licked my face. I've taught them, like, they can't go and just lick random people's faces. But this is something they've done from, like, really, really young. And I'm just like, they're not. That's just, I think, just their way of showing love. They pretend like they're going to give you a kiss on the cheek and then they'll lick you. And they think it's hilarious because, obviously, your cheek's wet now and you're like, ugh.
Right.
So I think, yeah, these are little ways that, you know, what's okay at home and what's not okay when you come out of the house.
Yes. Yes. I also wanted to say, because when you were talking about the kiss chase game, that you felt uncomfortable. So
yeah.
I think that a really important aspect of this as well is teaching kids to listen to that feeling and yes. that it's okay to say, I'm feeling uncomfortable. I'm not going to do this.
But sometimes they won't know that it's an uncomfortable feeling. They might just say, no, but you can talk to them about that feeling. If it right. doesn't feel right, mm-hmm. if you're not happy with it, then, you know, you can mm-hmm. tell a teacher, or, you know, you can tell me or your mom or, you know, or your dad. So yeah, I definitely agree with you.
Yeah. Because yes, I think that we do have to teach that step of like, okay, my intuition, my inner self is saying, whoa, this is not okay. So what do I do about that? And I think that that was the step that got missed in the millennial generation.
Yeah.
Of like, if you feel uncomfortable, the solution that seemed to be presented by culture widely was ignore it.
Yeah.
And yeah. and I'm
don't hopeful. Say anything. Keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, don't say anything. Yeah. And I'm hopeful that this next generation is already, I mean,
they're a lot more vocal than us.
They are.
I'm in my 30s. Great. Are you in my yeah. age range? I don't know.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm
you are.
33.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're a lot more vocal, I think. A lot more vocal and they've been brought up on social media, which means they've been exposed to certain things a lot younger than, they should sometimes, like, you know, when we grew up, literally playing outside was like the thing to do, and, you know, not having a phone, knocking, literally going to your friend's house and knocking the door and hoping they right. can come out, hoping that they're indoors, because you never had a phone to call them to see if they're home before you got there. And, you know, so we've been brought up very different to this generation. So I think that they're definitely a lot more, I don't know if I should say this, but they're a lot more attention seeking. So I feel like they speak up more, if that makes sense.
Yeah. They're using their voices. And yeah. I think that, you know, we've seen some ways that that has manifested really well and some that are more problematic, and
yeah,
we can negotiate that as we go. But I am excited that the movement is more towards saying it out loud, because, you know,
calling them out. Yeah.
Yeah. Calling it out, saying it. And because, like, Brené Brown talks all the time about shame. Once you start talking about your shame, it diminishes it.
Yeah. No one can hold it against you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, naming it to tame it and all that good stuff, just talking about it is huge.
Yeah.
And so I think having these really nuanced conversations with older kids is a very, very important part of that. Or even with younger kids, you know, like you were saying about, like, this is okay behavior in the home, but outside of the home, this is not okay behavior, things like that.
And even then you have to be careful, because a lot of sexual abuse does happen from, you know, the home.
In the home, right?
So you have to say, you have to be very careful with your wording as well.
Yeah. You know?
Even though exactly. I say, this is okay if you want to do this with Sharda. Mommy and daddy are okay with you doing this with Sharda. But if someone else does it with you, you need to speak up, you know. So obviously everyone's going to have different relationships with different people. So it's really important to be mindful of the language that we use as well.
Yeah. And I think that brings up a good point about this shift away. And There is an episode from way back called Keeping Kids Safe that talks about some of this stuff too, which I'll link down in the show notes just in case anyone wants more information. But that we moved away from stranger danger more towards tricky people. So now we talk about, like, an adult should never ask you to keep a secret from your parents, from your trusted grown-ups. There should never be an adult in your life that wants you to keep a secret. And let, you know, and then you can talk about, like, okay, a birthday gift is a surprise. A surprise is different than a secret. A surprise is you will tell them at a certain point that is near in the future. Versus a secret, which the point is that you will never say it. And that's not okay. And then also, an adult should never need your assistance. They should ask another adult. So, like, an adult asking to help find their dog or help find a restaurant around or anything like that, an adult should never be asking a child. And saying that to your kids can help them be like, okay, you need to go ask a grown-up. Instead of just going.
Of playing a game, you hear that a lot. It's a game, it's just a game. When I was doing my training and we were talking about different ways that, you know, children deal with abuse, especially sexual abuse, sometimes the way the predator makes them believe or things that they say is it's a game.
Right.
And children like to play, right? So when you say it's a game, the child thinks there's nothing of it. It's not then until there was a case study where a little girl had, kind of replicated what was happening to her with another child. And she was like saying to the child, it's okay, it's just a game. It's okay, it's just a game. So these are the different ways of explaining to them what is a game. If you're playing a game and you don't know what's going on, that's not a game.
Right, right.
Yeah. Everyone in this game needs to know what's going on, and everyone in this game needs to agree with being a part of the game. Right?
Right. So there's ways. And if you want out of the game, you should be able to leave the game at any time.
There you go. You can change your mind at any time. Consent.
Yes. And that's another really important part of this, is that teaching about what consent means, and that your consent can be revoked and that's okay.
At any time.
You can change your mind at any time.
And that's okay.
No. And another thing, you know, we talked kind of at the beginning of this episode about teaching about body parts and things like that. And I think teaching children the proper name for body parts and using the proper name is also really, really important. We have this tendency to nickname penises and vaginas as different things.
And I'm guilty of that too.
Yeah, because it feels uncomfortable.
I normally go with what the child has said. So if the child says, this is my Winky, then I'm like, because that's the language that they've used, right?
Right.
And my nanny boys say they're Winky a lot. And I'll say to them, do you know what the real name is for your Winky? Mm-hmm. And then they say no. And I say, this is the real name, but you can call it a Winky if you want, because that's the language they've given me. But I also want them to be aware of what the real name is, right? But that's something that I've been guilty of in the past as well. So
I struggle with that as well. Most of my nanny families have used the proper names in the past, but yes, if you're working with a nanny family that does use nicknames for body parts, I would say that, you know your situation, you know your nanny family, but it might be worth bringing up to the parents why teaching the proper names is important. And this story I read online, there's no way to fact check it. And so I think we can treat it as a fable kind of, and just take the information from it that we need. But I read this story online about a child who their family called her vagina her cookie. And so she was telling her parents, my uncle eat, like, he ate my cookie. And she was, like, mad about it. And they misunderstood and thought that he had eaten, like, an actual cookie. And they were like, oh, well, you can just get another one.
Oh, my Lord.
And things like that. And so when we use these, you know, other terms, these nicknames, it gets really confusing. But if she had said, my uncle ate my vagina, like, that is very different.
Yes, very, very different. It makes me even feel sick, the thought of it. I don't know how people can harm children, personally. I don't know how people can harm other humans, but just children, they're just so innocent, and they're just so lovely. And I'm just like, how in your right mind? But this is why it's so important that we teach children about consent, and we teach them about their bodies and what's okay and what's not okay. And, you know, making sure that they can change their mind at any time, like you said. And I'm just hoping that the more we can teach this to children, the more chance they have of not being caught in a vulnerable situation or a tricky situation where they don't know what's going on and they can't speak up.
Right.
I'm just hoping. That's my biggest fear. So I always make sure that I'm very aware, like, when it comes to their body, and even how they look at themselves and how they look at their own body. Because if they treat their body with respect, which I always teach, make sure you treat yourself and your body with respect and love. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to damage yourself, then what's to say that they're not going to go out there and try and damage someone else's body, or, you know, violate someone else's body? So it really does really come down to, as well, self-love and teaching mm-hmm. children how to love themselves. That would be my take on that.
Yes, and I completely agree. One more aspect of this that I would love to discuss is I do think we have this tendency when we talk about consent and bodily autonomy to do it differently with boys and girls. And I think that there are some aspects that maybe we could talk about differently, but overall, it should be pretty much the same conversation.
Yeah.
No matter the gender that your child, you know, is. We are working our way towards a much fuller view of what gender means in general, which is lovely. I think that is helpful in this conversation as well. That gender is a construct and all of that. But I do think that when we decide to talk differently about it based on gender, that gets into dangerous territory as well. So just be cautious about that.
Yeah.
Really think about how the messages that you're sending, they should be almost identical. That on both sides of it, that boys have bodily autonomy, girls have bodily autonomy, and we all need to be both listening to our inner voices, our inner lives, our intuition, but we also need to all be respectful of other people's bodily autonomy too.
Most definitely.
So.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, lovely. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about?
No, I feel like we covered quite a lot.
Me too. That was a great Valentine's episode. So yeah, I just think that, you know, like, let's do the cookies and the treats and the, you know, stickers and Valentine's and all of that. But let's also redouble our focus on teaching bodily autonomy and consent, because it's
most definitely
really going to change the world.
Do you celebrate Valentine?
I do. Like, I actually celebrate more like Galentine's Day or Palentine's Day.
All right.
I sent out several, like, you know, little silly middle school type Valentines this year. Usually I would deliver them in person, but this year they had to be mailed, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really a fan of Valentine's, but I'm a very, very big fan of spreading love.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm all for spreading love, but I'm not I think we should do it every day, not just one day of the year.
Agreed. Completely agreed. But yeah. Well, wonderful. Well, Shada, where can people find out more about you and how to get in contact with you?
Okay. So they can find me via my website, which is nannyshars.com. That's nannyshars.com, nannyshars.com. And they can find me on social media platforms. So I'm on Instagram and I'm on YouTube and I'm on Twitter at nannyshards. And I'm also on LinkedIn at Shada Lambert and I'm on Facebook at nannyshards official.
Lovely. yeah. And listeners, Shada is like, so delightful. So yeah. So I just encourage you, you know, if you are like, I want to reach out, but whatever the end of that but is.
No, feel me. Don't
just
please.
Do it. Just do it.
Send me a DM on any of the platforms. I'm mostly active on Instagram. I also offer mentoring for nannies. So please feel free to have a look at my mentoring packages on my website or send me a message. I am an open book. I will reply to every single message that is sent to me. So don't feel like, you know, oh my God, I can't message her. No. You message me, okay?
Yes.
It might be a bit of a time difference if you're not in the UK, but I will always get back to you. And if I don't, my PA will definitely notify me that I haven't. So
lovely.
I definitely will.
Love that accountability. Okay, wonderful. Well, go look up Nanny Shars. Get on her wavelength because it's great. And then we end each episode with a cute, funny story. And Shada has brought one.
Yeah, so I was looking after my nieces and nephews the other day. And I happened to overhear them having a conversation. And they were sitting there and they said, oh yeah, well, I'm going to ask Aunt Shada to get me this. And I'm going to ask Shada to get me this. And I could hear them. And I was thinking, where are they going with all these expensive gifts? And then one of them was like, well, I can ask Aunt Shada to get me this because she's rich. And I was like, whoa, where did that come from? And then another one was like, I know, because she went to the machine in the wall and it gave her loads of money. And I was making children crack me up. Bless them. Only they knew. They thought that I go to the wall and I just get money from this wall, but they don't know it's a cash point, which you guys call an ATM.
We do. Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Oh, it's so cute. And I was just laughing. I didn't even interrupt. I just listened to it. I didn't have a room, but I could hear them and I was cracking up. And I actually called my mom, like, Mom, you never guess what. But yeah, that was my funny story of the week.
So great. I love that too, of like a kid. Yeah, I mean, like, that makes sense. They're like, oh, she can go to this wall and it just gives her money. Oh,
money. I'm like, manifest that for me, guys. Manifest for me, please.
Yes. Oh, that's great. Thank you so much for sharing.
Okay.
And thank you for spending time with us today. I really, really appreciate you taking the time.
You are most welcome. It's such a pleasure always coming on. Second time, I feel really honored. I'm like, woohoo!
Yes, and I am very serious when I say it will not be the last because I love chatting with you.
Thank you so much.
And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Take care. Bye.
The Chronicles of Nania is produced and hosted by Martha Tyler. Artwork by Noni Blastodon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudios.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nania and on Twitter at Nania Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnania@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This show has been brought to you by Machine Culture.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.